And welcome back to the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Joined now by the play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Royals. You see him on TV, you hear him on the radio. That's Ryan LaFever, and Ryan is down in Surprise, Arizona with the Royals in spring training. Ryan, how you doing? Get a little bit of a suntan down there?
I did get a little bit of a suntan, and I'm ready to go home. I think that sums it up for everybody, and it also sums it up for every season. There just comes a point where let's get going. The guys are ready to go. Let's get the regular season going. And I think after what happened last year, that's even amplified this year. Let's take this team and find out if they can build on what happened last season. And it's really been a very uneventful spring training. Tim Collins getting Tommy John surgery has really been the only newsworthy thing that's come out of camp. There's been very little competition. So we don't have the typical storylines of spring training of who's going to win this job and who's going to win that job. I think it's just time to get out of here and get back to Kansas City.
Give me an idea of the feel, the atmosphere this year compared to last year. Of course, there were some expectations last year going to spring training, but nobody thought that the Royals would go all the way to the World Series and be a run or two away from being world champions, and now going into this spring training.
Well, that's a question I get often, not just this year, but every year. And as far as the players go and the mood around the team and the clubhouse, I have never been to spring training when someone has said, boy, this is a really bad camp, and the guys are in bad moods, and nobody's optimistic about the season. I mean, I think whether the Royals are coming off the World Series or they're coming off a 100-loss season, everyone seems to be in a good mood. Everybody's optimistic. Camp is always going great. So in that way, this spring training is no different from any other. The biggest difference as far as feel goes has been with the fans. This is by far the most fans we've had, the most energetic fans we've had. I mean, they're just packing Surprise Stadium. They're following the Royals on the road, which is, not saying much because a lot of the road places are, 20, 30, 40 minutes away. But still, I mean, they're coming down here and adding some excitement to as far as wins and losses go, meaningless games. So that part has been really fun, just to see that enthusiasm. I mean, Lorenzo Cain comes out and gets in the on-deck circle and bends over and ties his shoe, and he gets an ovation from the fans in the crowd. I mean, it's just the fans just love this team, and the weather's been great. And so, and I think in Kansas City, the spring breaks this year were really staggered. I want to say there were three different weeks of spring breaks, and so we've just had three different waves of fans coming down with their kids, and so that's been a lot of fun, because all the spring trainings I've gone to, I've seen other teams that have a really good following, and there's a lot of energy in their ballpark, and then their fans will come to Surprise Stadium, and there's a lot of energy for them when they're the road team. So it's kind of nice to be on that side.
We're talking to Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Kansas City Royals. See him on TV and listen to him on the radio as well. So let's go around the horn a little bit here, Ryan, if we would. And let's start in the outfield, where the Royals have a new right fielder, Alex Rijos, that they signed a one-year deal, a free agent. Do you like that signing, and is that an upgrade in right field?
I personally, and I say personally because it is personal, I was really rooting for Torii Hunter. I thought Torii Hunter would have been a great fit for this team. I mean, I think he still has something left in the tank. He's Lorenzo Cain's favorite player. I think he could have had a very good influence on Lorenzo. But, I mean, Lorenzo was the Royals Player of the Year last year, and he was the ALCS MVP. And yet I think that would have been a great move for Lorenzo and any of the outfielders, just being around Torii Hunter. But as it turns out, his heart was in Minnesota, where it all began for him, and I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for the Twins. So, I think Alex Rijos, in different ways, brings some of the things that Torii Hunter brings. He's just very, very businesslike. He's very professional. He's very polished, just in everything that he does. And I think he's going to be better defensively in right field. I don't think the Royals are going to lose any speed in that position. And, if he can stay healthy, he's proven in spring training that he can still swing the bat, and as you pointed out, Wade, he's on a one-year contract, so there's some motivation there. If he wants to stay at this type of salary level at the major league level, he has to prove this year that he still has something left in the tank. So I think all in all, it was a surprising move because I didn't even realize Alex Rios was on the Royals' radar, and I don't think a lot of other people did. But when you add it up and you see what the Royals are doing offensively, what their identity is, I think he really fits into that.
I know he only hit four homers last year, but he's capable. Whether he hits homers or not, he's got extra base power, and that's something that certainly Nori Aoki did not possess for the team last year. Lorenzo Cain in center, I think the question, as with probably any baseball team going into a new year, is if we stay healthy, we could be really, really good, and that certainly applies to Lorenzo Cain in center, and of course Alex Gordon coming off the offseason wrist surgery as well.
Yeah, and Alex looks fine. The Royals were very cautious with him, and Alex was very cautious, and that was smart. He's a pro. He's been around. He knows how to get ready for the season. He just had to accelerate that process because of the wrist. And, you know, Lorenzo had a little injury issue very early in the season, but after that, you know, he stayed healthy. And, he's got a chance to be an all-star. He's got a chance to be one of the best in the game because he does it all. He plays defense. He can hit for power. He runs. And something clicked with him. And it started in September, and it went through the playoffs where, you know, he's just a very calm, respectful person.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear him shooting his mouth off, and he's never in any trouble in the clubhouse or with his teammates. He's just a very respectful person. And yet something happened in September last year where there was like an animal inside of him that came out, and we saw a lot of enthusiasm when he'd get big hits, a lot of enthusiasm when he'd make a big play on defense. You know, he famously told a Tigers player, you know, where he could take his idle chat when Lorenzo was on base and trying to help win the game. I mean, there's a leadership quality that came out, and I'm really curious, probably as much as any other player this year, I'm really curious to see, you know, what the result will be of that this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's go to behind the plate. Salvador Perez, you and I talked about it last year when you were on with us. He's the heart and soul of this team, the one guy you probably are going to have the hardest time replacing. I know there's been chat about trying to rest him a little bit more this year. What do you think about that situation? You got Kratz as your backup catcher as of now. Do you see the Royals trying to rest Salvador Perez a little bit more often earlier in the season, or do you think you get to a point where every game's important and it's really enticing to just leave him in the lineup more often than not?
Well, there's been a lot of different ideas thrown around as far as how to rest him. You know, do you pick a day of the week? Do you pick day games after night games? Do you pick games before off days so you can give him 2 days off in a row? Do you line him up with a pitcher and make him one pitcher's personal catcher? I'll just say this, Wade, I'll believe it when I see it.
That's what I'm thinking.
This is the third year that they've talked about having to rest Salvador Perez. And for good reason, the Royals just haven't gotten around to finding the right formula because he is as close to irreplaceable as anybody on this team. So they say they're going to find ways to rest him. Salvador wants to play. I mean, he caught 158 games last year, if you include the postseason, which was a major league record, and then he goes to Japan and he catches some more right after that. So I'll believe it when I see it.
Salvador Perez, all-star catcher behind the plate, and then at first base, you've got Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas at third, and of course, both of them had outstanding postseasons. I guess the biggest question, and nobody knows the answer, is can these guys build off of that and have really good regular seasons? We've heard all about Moustakas having good spring trainings. It's really never translated during the regular season. And I've heard so many people say, this Royals team will be better offensively. You have Morales, and he should bounce back, and Rios can hit for some power. That's an upgrade. But it really comes back to, will Moustakas and Hosmer take that next step offensively, doesn't it?
Yeah, and those guys will always be linked together. I mean, when they're in the minor leagues, we were waiting for Moose and Hos. I mean, you always talk about wait till Hosmer and Moustakas get here. I mean, those two just always link together. And I do believe that they will have good years this year. And what that looks like, I don't know. But because of the postseason, not just for those two, but I think the entire team, I think a huge burden was lifted off of their shoulders to get to Game 7 of the World Series. And I think I know for a fact that these guys like one another. They like playing together, and they like winning together. And every team if a player is smart, they're going to say the right things when it comes to their goals for the season. They just want to, they want to win a championship. They want to do whatever they can to help the team win. But deep down, the players are humans just like we are, and especially when you're a Major League Baseball player, you don't know how long you're going to be around. And so there's a selfish side to it, which, you know, shouldn't be condemned. It's just, you know, I got to do the best that I can, because this is not a job that I can have into my 50s and my 60s, and I sure hope I put up good numbers. And if that helps the team win, so be it. But these guys, I really believe when they talk about team first, that it applies to them as much, if not more, than just about any other team. And so I say that because I don't know how important it is to Eric Hosmer to hit 30 home runs, or to Mike Moustakas to hit 30 home runs, or for them to drive in 100 runs. I think they discovered, and it began in the middle of September last year, when Ned Yost made a change to the lineup and really put an emphasis of speed at the very bottom and the top of the order. And they, you know, pun intended, they really ran with it. And they got them into the playoffs. It served them well in the playoffs. And I think every guy, to borrow an old cliche, I think every guy just has their oar in the boat, and they're all just kind of doing their job to just paddle in the same direction. And I think, with that being said, Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, neither one of them, I believe, will feel like they have something to prove to the industry this year, or that they have to somehow carry this team because they're a former first-round pick, and, you know, so many expectations have been placed on them. I mean, I think they're going to be more relaxed. They've proven that they can succeed on the biggest stage. And so I don't know what the numbers are going to look like, but I really believe that those guys, and this team in general, they're just going to have a good year. I would be stunned if they don't get into the postseason next year. And I'm predicting they're going to win the division, and I've predicted that they're going to win the division. And when they finish the regular season in Minnesota, they will have already clinched the division. I don't think it's going to be that close.
Wow.
Because I think there's just, and this is the part of the game that's just very hard to quantify in a very, you know, number scientific based industry that we're in right now, where, you know, well, let's look at the numbers. Well, what's his on-base percentage? What's his slugging percentage? What's his OPS? What's his weight? And this is something you just can't quantify. But if you're around a team and you've been on a team, it's just there. You can feel it. Minnesota, when they won 6 of 9 divisions, you know, they didn't have a lot of all-star star players on their team, but they had a feel for who they were. They knew who they were not, and they really stayed within that, and they were successful for a long period of time. And I see a lot of that. I see a lot of that with this team. So the long answer to your short question is, I think those guys are going to put a lot less pressure on themselves because they know they can do it, and the team knows that they can do it. 2 years ago, they were 12 games below 500, and they finished 10 games above 500.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, there were at least two occasions when it looked like the season was lost, when they got swept by the Astros.
Yes.
When they finished the second half 0-4, it looked like the season was gone, and they got to Game 7 of the World Series. That's going to serve them well, because there will be a point this upcoming season when it seems like, you know, this season is going to be a disaster, because, the expectations after Game 7 of the World Series, these guys know how to pull themselves up off the ground and finish strong. So all of that being said, I think ties into your question of how Hosmer and Moustakas are going to play this year and the lack of pressure that they're going to put on themselves.
Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Kansas City Royals, with us on the Sports Ticket today, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. One more question on Moose. Certainly he saw the defensive shift a ton last year, and there was one occasion in the playoffs where he laid down a bunt and he got on. And I go back to the World Series. One of the biggest plays of that World Series is when Brandon Belt laid down a bunt, got things going. I believe that was in Game 4 when the Royals had an opportunity to go up 3-1. Is Moustakas and the Royals hitting coaches and coaching staff working with him to beat that shift in regards to hitting it the opposite way or occasionally laying down a bunt? Or is it just simply this is the way you hit and you're just gonna get past it?
No, he's bunted quite a bit in spring training, actually, successfully and unsuccessfully. I mean, he's fouled some away, but I think the point is that he will bunt. And, you know, back to your previous question, you know, what kind of years are they going to have? And I say they're going to have good years. I don't know what that looks like. And, you know, and getting back to Mike Moustakas, you know, how important is 30 home runs to him? I don't know. But I know this. I think he understands that if he comes up to lead off an inning and the Royals are down two or three and they've got that shift on,
mm-hmm.
he will lay down a bunt and get on base, because the best thing he can do for the team right there is to get on base and start a rally. A solo home run is going to, you know, will help, but what he needs to do is get on base. And the odds are of him getting a bunt down and getting on first are much better than him hitting a home run. Now, if he comes up with the Royals down by one and there's two on and two out and they've got the shift, well, now his job is to swing the bat, get the ball out of the ballpark. So I think, and it goes back to the team understanding what they need to do to win games. I think he will bunt. He's going to force the defense to respect that side of the field. He's had some base hits in spring training to left field, to left center, to center field. But his bread and butter is to get a pitch that he can pull and hit it out of the ballpark. But you know what? Willie Wilson told me something years ago. He and I were on a caravan together, and about, you know, he and I were, I guess, you know, he's older than I am, but we're probably both from the same era of, you know, man, kids these days, they don't play the game like they used to.
Yeah.
And Willie said, you know, when you go to the plate, the game will dictate what you need to do. So in other words, when you go up to home plate, just the field and the situation will explain to you what you need to do when you come up. You don't have the same role every time you come to the plate. It's going to change from at-bat to at-bat. And so I think that's what the bunt has to do with him. I think hitting the ball to the other way is going to do for him. But by and large, when he comes to the plate, he's going to look for a pitch that he can pull and hit it out of the ballpark, because he still has the capability of doing that.
Let's focus on the middle infield. Certainly Escobar had a tremendous season last year, hit the ball well, solid defense, and then in late in the year, putting him at the top of the order kind of ignited the offense a bit and got that run going into the postseason. I expect him, it sounds like he's going to be the leadoff guy again to start the season at shortstop. And then you got Omar Infante at second base, who has been battling some elbow issues. First of all, can you update us on Infante's situation? And then two, what do you expect out of Escobar this year? Certainly the 2 years ago, struggled offensively at the plate. Last year, bounced back. And some people talk about how, well, Moustakas and Hosmer are certainly going to be better this year. But when people are so optimistic, as you and I know, that's great. But there's also guys that come back down to the pack, such as the bullpen was so good last year, HDH, that it's probably going to be hard to repeat the same numbers. Maybe the same for Escobar?
I have a sneaking suspicion he's going to have a really good year. He wants to lead off. I mean, he was begging to lead off. And when Ned Yost put him there in the middle of September and he took off, I mean, he made it very clear that he didn't want this to be a one-game thing or a one-week thing or a one-month thing. He wants to lead off. And so I think because of that, and wanting to establish himself as a leadoff hitter, I believe he's going to have a good year. I think he understands, and this ties into what we've been talking about, I think he understands what his job is better now in getting on base and using his legs. And you know, the Royals led the major leagues in stolen bases last year, and it wasn't really until the last month or two of the season that I really felt like they put fear into the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the first 4 months of the season, they just had more stolen bases than anyone else. But they weren't like, you know, the leaders in stolen bases like those Tampa Bay teams used to be that, you know, just scare you to death with their speed. You know, these guys really took that on. And I think Escobar understands. And I think he's gonna have a really good year. I don't think there's gonna be a significant drop off. I wouldn't be surprised if he elevated his game. Infante, I'd be concerned about Infante. You know, he's a very close to the vest kind of a guy. He's playing in the field again. I haven't seen him really cut loose with his arm, so he might still be concerned with what's going on in his elbow. But this is two spring trainings in a row now where he's had arm problems, and he could hardly throw at the end of the regular season because of his shoulder. So that would be a concern for me. I mean, I'd like to see more to be convinced that, you know, that he's over this. And yet at the same time, I'm not too concerned, because I think if he went down and Christian Colon got a chance to play every day at second base, I think he'd be just fine. I think he'd do a fine job, and there wouldn't be a, a, you a drop off in production.
So let's turn to the pitching. Certainly a strength last year for the Royals. No more James Shields, Edison Volquez they get from the Pirates. Duffy, Ventura will be your 1-2 guys. Ventura 1 and Duffy 2. Ventura, the open day starter, announced by manager Ned Yost. And then, of course, the bullpen. It appears on paper this bullpen could be deeper than it was last year, which is scary for the rest of the American League. Let's start with the starting rotation. It seems to me, I talked with Nate Buchady, we had him on last week. We've talked to a few other people. And when you look at the Royals, that it could come down to Duffy and Ventura. Can they stay healthy and can they each throw, say, 200 innings? Because one thing you're going to miss with Shields was he's Mr. Durable. He went out there every fifth day. He gave you 6, 7, 8 innings, and he would eat up 226 innings, I think, he threw last year. How do the Royals compensate for the loss of Shields, and what do you expect out of this rotation this year?
Well, I'll say this about the rotation. I mean, I think it truly is, you know, the sum is going to be, you know, greater than the individual parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you're losing James Shields, but, you know, I think the Royals had Bruce Chen in the starting rotation, maybe when they broke camp last year.
Yeah.
So I think the rotation is better now. The sum is greater than last year, even with the loss of James Shields. I think Danny Duffy is going to be better. I think Yordano Ventura is going to be better. Jeremy Guthrie and Jason Vargas are going to be Jeremy Guthrie and Jason Vargas, which is just fine on a very good team. And I think Edison Volquez is going to be just fine, too. So you don't really have, I mean, other than Ventura, and we'll see how he responds to being the team's ace. But I think the starting rotation, I think the starting rotation is going to be just fine. I think Yordano Ventura has two roles this year. One of them he's well aware of, and the other one he's not aware of. The one he is aware of is he's the Royals' number one starter, and they're going to look to him to end losing streaks and continue winning streaks. He's going to be the guy that when you take the mound, you know, the Royals have a great chance of winning tonight. I also think Yordano Ventura is going to make Danny Duffy better because, I think Danny loves all of his teammates. Danny Duffy is one of my favorite guys. He's just a happy-go-lucky, just a good kid. And yet he's a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it was hard for him to see a pitcher that, you know, was once below him on the organizational depth chart shining in the postseason, and he couldn't pitch because he had that rib cage issue. I don't think Danny Duffy's going to want that to happen again. I think Danny Duffy's going to want to show who Danny Duffy is and what the organization always felt he was going to be. And I don't think Edison Volquez is going to let some kid pitch that much better than he does. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's going to elevate Edison Volquez's game. You know, they're both from the Dominican Republic. They both grew up idolizing Pedro Martinez, and I think Yordano Ventura is going to make Edison Volquez better. That's just a dumb prediction of mine, but I think it's going to come to fruition. So I'm really not concerned with the starting rotation. I feel good about the starting rotation, and they're going to be tied to the bullpen. And Luke Hochaver coming back, and if Luke Hochaver can be close to what he was 2 years ago, that's huge for the bullpen, and it's huge for the starting rotation, because there will be nights when Ned Yost has Luke Hochaver, Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis, and Greg Holland all available, which means you can start that process in the sixth inning. And then there are going to be games when Wade Davis has pitched three games in a row and he's not available, but Luke Hochaver can fill in. There will be days when Kelvin Herrera has pitched 3 days in a row. Luke Hochaver can fill in. There will be days when Greg Holland has pitched 3 games in a row, and Wade Davis can move up, and Luke Hochaver can fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke Hochaver coming back, he kind of becomes the pinwheel in this whole scenario here. If he's healthy, and I think that's why he's going to start the season on the disabled list and back in Omaha, is because when they get him, when they have him on the roster, I think they want him being able to pitch back-to-back days, occasionally three consecutive days. I figured the Royals would go out and get another starting pitcher. I mean, I figured the bullpen is, you know, strong. It's just, like you said, they may not put up the same numbers. I think they'll be just as effective.
Mm-hmm.
When they signed Luke Hochaver to a 2-year deal, I thought, well, that's kind of curious. Does that mean that, you know, Herrera, Davis, or Holland is going to be traded? But it's that there makes the bullpen better and it makes the starting rotation better. So is the rotation on paper as good as it was last year? Can the bullpen put up the numbers that they did last year? I don't know. Maybe not. But I think 1 through 12 or 1 through 13, however the pitching staff turns out, is going to be better and as reliable as it was last year.
Now, I tend to agree with you on that. And also Jason Frazier, you'll have him for an entire season, which will be helpful as well. One last question on the pitching staff. Most teams will deal with injuries at some point in time. It's a long season. Of course, Duffy missed a little bit of time last year. Vargas missed a little bit of time. Nothing, you know, super long. But certainly it's tough. The Royals, for the most part, stayed relatively healthy during their run last year. If the Royals have an injury to the rotation, what kind of depth do the Royals have? Who would be the next guy up, per se, or the next couple of guys that would be in line to replace a guy that would be injured for an extended period of time in that rotation?
Yeah, that's a good question, Wade. I mean, that's the question mark, which mm-hmm. I think was answered when Brandon Finnegan was sent down and when the Royals signed Chris Young, is that their starting five is good. And I think there have been many years in the last, 15, 20 years where if the Royals have five good starting pitchers, you think, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
But when you're a World Series caliber club now, what happens when one of those five goes down? Mm-hmm. And are you going to go drag in the lake and just get some warm body to come up and fill in the rotation? The Royals can't afford to do that anymore.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot on the line this year. So that was, I think that's why Finnegan going to the minor leagues and being a starter can be one of those guys. Chris Young, if somebody goes down, he can slide into the rotation and be one of those guys. This is going to make some fans cringe, but the organization is still high on Aaron Brooks, who had that disaster in Toronto. He just, poor kid couldn't get out of the first inning, but they like him, and they think that, he's someone that they could call up. And you got a guy named Johan Pino that pitched with Minnesota last year. They feel like he can come up. But if you're talking about somebody who can come up and continue the flow of the team, and there's not a huge drop-off if one of the starters goes down, I think Chris Young is your first option. And if all goes well in Double-A, you might see Brandon Finnegan at some point coming up.
And they also signed Chris Medlin, who maybe he'd be available later
Completely forgot about him. I mean, the chances are you're going to have a pitcher that maybe doesn't get injured,
mm-hmm.
but maybe, starts fading after the All-Star break, and you could use a fresh arm in there. You're absolutely right. Chris Medlin then is, I was thinking more April, May,
sure.
June-ish, but if something mm-hmm. happens in, July or August, now you got a guy who's very proven and been very successful on good teams available.
And never hurts to have depth. And if you get to the trading deadline and you have maybe an extra starting pitcher that you can, maybe he's proven himself and filling in with somebody that's hurt, but you got another guy middle part of the season that's maybe ready to make that step from the minors into the rotation, you have a bit of a bargaining trip to maybe improve elsewhere on your team, which I know seems like a foreign concept to Royals fans over the last so many years, but we're now already, we can talk about these things, and that's what makes it so exciting about Royals baseball. There's more optimism this year than ever before, obviously from what the Royals accomplished last year, but the fact that you can talk about, I think this team's going to win the division, I think they'll have it wrapped up before they play in Minnesota into the season. The fact that we can talk about, they might have some extra pieces where maybe they could trade to improve in another area. That's what gets fans excited, because there's so much optimism with this team after what they did last year.
Yeah, and your point's a good one. Last year, the Royals made some deals around the break to try and get into the playoffs. Let's get into the playoffs. Let's get this monkey off our back and get into the playoffs. Hey, man, you come up Game 7 of the World Series. The Royals are strong contention or leading the division when you get to the All-Star break. I don't know. I wouldn't be stunned at all if the Royals went out and got a significant upgrade somewhere at mm-hmm. the trading deadline. Because now we're talking World Series.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about ending the 29-year drought. This is about going back to the World Series. And we all saw how great that was and how exciting it was for the city and for the region. Depth will come in very handy, because the Royals want to get back there again.
It's so hard. I mean, we look at the Tigers. So many years they've been good. And they make the World Series or make the playoffs, but they have not gotten as close as the Royals did to winning it last year in their first trip in 29 years. When you look at this division, Cleveland was picked by Sports Illustrated to win it all, so we can eliminate them. forget them because that's the SI jinx, right? And then there's the Tigers. They're getting older, and they've spent a lot of money on some older players, and the bullpen still is a major question mark and questions with Verlander, although I think they have enough depth in their starting pitching to probably be all right. And then you've got the Twins are certainly improved, and the White Sox spent a lot of money and made some big splashes, and I'm sure they'll be improved. But I don't know. The way I look at it, Ryan, is I see Cleveland is a concern, of course. Detroit's always going to be a factor, and the Royals. And I think a lot of people forget, just because the Royals made it all the way to the World Series, American League champions, they didn't win this division. In fact, they really badly wanted to have a tiebreaker game with Detroit. They wanted to win the division, and the Tigers owned the Royals last year. What was it, 14-4? I would imagine that's one of the biggest goals the Royals have this year, is to win the division and knock out the Tigers.
Yeah, yeah. And I see the division the way you do, too. Right? Minnesota got better, but they still have a ways to go. Chicago, impressive, the money that they spent. I'm skeptical the first year after you make significant changes to your roster.
Yeah.
I think the dust kind of has to settle. And, you know, you got Jeff Samardzija, who's going to be a free agent, so he'll be putting some pressure on himself. You know, Adam LaRoche and Melky Cabrera and David Robertson, they're with new teams, are going to want to prove that they're worth those contracts. And I just don't, they could be better, they could be contending, and I could be wrong. I just think that much change in 1 year takes a while. And Detroit, I don't think they're any better than they were last year. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. And they just barely got past the Royals to win the division.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you. I think it's going to come down to the Royals and the Indians. And I think both teams will end up in the playoffs.
So hard to get back to the playoffs. That's one step. It's also extremely hard to make it back to the World Series back-to-back years. It sounds like
this team's made for the playoffs, though.
That's true.
I would not want to face the Royals if you get into a short series with them with days off when you can rest the bullpen.
That's true.
Ned Yost, I'm not going to take anything away from Ned Yost, what he did in the playoffs last year. His demeanor, his leadership had a lot to do with how much the team thrived in the postseason. And yet he didn't have one game in the entire postseason where he had to worry about the availability of his bullpen because of the days off.
Yeah.
And that is a huge advantage in the postseason.
Absolutely. So you feel pretty confident, at least if the team stays healthy, and that's a big if with any team, that this team can make it back to the World Series, it sounds like.
Well, I really don't like predictions. You know, how many
games
are the Royals going to win?
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm not good at that, and I really don't.
But you feel good about their chances.
The reason why a lot of people aren't picking the Royals this year and a lot of people are picking the Indians, no disrespect to the Indians, they could win it all. They have a lot of the right pieces. But I think today, people who make predictions, I think there are a lot of people, here's my judgment, I think there are a lot of people who want to say in October, see, I told you so, look at how smart I am.
Yeah.
And you do that by making an unconventional pick. And so I'm just not big on predictions. I don't know what's going to happen. You began talking about health. Who knows what's going to happen with health? The Royals have been tremendously blessed with good health the last two seasons. But I do believe in this. And, I get back to watching Minnesota win 6 of 9 divisions. You know, I worked there for a little while, and I have friends in that organization. And every year, nobody picked the Twins,
yeah.
and they'd win the division.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, nobody picked the Twins. They win the division. And just talking to people within that organization, they would say, you know what, these guys, they know how to play together. They have a good feel for how to win games. They are a team in that all 25 guys mean something to this team. There's not just one or two guys carrying the team. They pitch, they play defense, they run, they do all those things that don't get fantasy players very excited. But at this level, in the real world, that's what wins games. I just see a lot of similarities. And, you know, I grew up in a family of coaches, so I believe in those so-called intangibles. And that's why I'm predicting the Royals win the division. This is my 17th year at the Royals. I don't know if I've ever predicted that they were going to win the division. I mean, I'm just not my style to just say,
yeah.
hey, everybody, our team's going to win the division.
Right.
I just really, truly feel like they're going to win the division.
Well, that's great. I hope you're right. I hope your prediction comes out to be true. One last question for you, and we really appreciate your time as always, Ryan. I know you're very busy, and you're going to be even busier as well coming up in a moment. We'll explain that in a moment. But time for an off-the-wall question. You're in Surprise, Arizona, which is a unique name for a town. besides Surprise, Arizona, what is the oddest or silliest name of a town that you've ever come across in your life?
Knobnoster, Missouri.
Knobnoster, Missouri, right off
the bat. I don't know what that means, but I just always kind of laugh, and it's not too far from where I live, too.
Knobnoster,
Missouri.
Mine is Gas, Kansas.
Gas? I've been to Gas, Kansas.
Have you really?
Yeah, I've been to Gas, Kansas.
Right,
it's very close to Iola.
Yeah, right next to Iola. Played golf there at the Allen Country Club a few times with my stepfather-in-law. And Gas is right over there. And I think everybody can insert their own jokes.
We had a caravan stop in Iola, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And then I think we actually stopped to get gas in Gas.
Yeah, there you go.
So there were jokes all the way back to Kansas City, but I have been to Gas, Kansas.
Absolutely. Well, good. I'm glad that you know where that's at. So if we ever want to meet up and I say, let's meet in Gas, you'll know what I'm talking about. That's good to know. And finally, you are going to be very busy. First of all, let me be probably not the first, but let me be one of the ones that congratulate you before it even happens. We wish you nothing but the best. Hope everything goes well for your family and your wife. But you're expecting another child, right?
I am. Yep. We have our first girl Thursday. We're going in. Sarah's going to be induced. And this will be number 4 in about 5 years. We have 3 boys and our first girl. It's been a crazy off season. You know, the World Series, that takes a month out of the normal off season, which is just fine. We moved. And we got a new season coming and a new baby coming. And but yeah, we're very excited. Thank you, Wade.
Yeah, well, how boring is that? All you need to do is go for 5 more, and you could form a baseball team.
I don't think so. you go right ahead, and you can tell me all about it.
I got a feeling if I ran that by your wife, she'd probably say no too. I would imagine.
Yeah. She's been pregnant 4 times in 5 years. I think we're gonna have a tough time convincing her of that. And I'm already going to be 62 years old when this baby graduates high school. So
you've already done the math on that, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of
course,
I've done the math.
Very nice.
Yeah. I mean, I figured when I'm 62, I'd be on a cruise ship playing shuffleboard, but I'm going to be at pep rallies at high school.
Yes.
So,
yes.
That's fine, though. We're really excited.
Awesome.
It'll keep me young.
Yeah, absolutely, and keep you on your toes too. Hey, congratulations! Thanks for the time, man, and we'll talk to you again later on in the season.
Okay, Wade. Good to talk to you.
Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, here on the Sports Ticket.